There is widespread use of fixed-term contracts by employers, but are these contracts really fixed-term or should they be deemed permanent? This is Stuff Employers Should Know.
Welcome to Stuff Employers Should Know, proudly brought to you by LabourNet, management's ultimate HR solution.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Barry Gordon Davis. As always, keeping his finger on the pulse is yes, like it, Ismail, but we'll keep him quiet in this session. We've unplugged his mic. And joining me again, friend of the show, is Audrey Lowe. How are you doing?
Good, and yourself, Barry? Nice to be back.
Good, yes. Just struggling with the load shedding, water outages, you know, just average day in Joburg, South Africa. But yeah, let's talk about today's topic. Now, it is a hot topic because a lot of employers have sent us mails asking us questions about how to do this. We've done lots of seminars about it. And there's a lot of misconception with regards to the correct and legitimate use of fixed-term contracts or all forms of non-standard employment, if you can call it that. But so the purpose of today's session specifically focuses on those that are employed. And why I say this is because a lot of employers, and I say employers tongue-in-cheek, refer to workers, or let's say people providing a service for them, as contractors, for example. Now, they can be in the form of an independent contractor. Now, if they are a genuine independent contractor, somebody that does work for somebody, but he's not employed by them, invoices them, pays their own taxes, has their own business, and the like, a podcast on its own, they are excluded from what we're going to be discussing today because they do not obviously enjoy the protections or provisions in the Labour Relations Act. So what we're referring to today are those that are, let's say, presumed or deemed to be employees of an employer who then either is a temporary employment service provider or is utilizing a fixed-term contract for their employment. And that's what we're going to be discussing today. So a bit of background with regards to it is that if you saw, and when was it, around about like 2015 or?
2014.
It was promulgated and the like. And this was as a result of a lot of, call it unhappiness with the labor force. And I say that with respect because most of protest actions and the likes, even when there was, let's say, legitimate substantive reasoning for protest action, increased wages and the like, they always bolted on extra additional unhappiness about the use of what they refer to as labor broking and the like, and temporary employment service providers. And I've seen many, many, many unhappy protests where, in addition to the increased wages, we also want the Department of Labor to ban labor broking and everybody should be permanent. Now, obviously, the Department of Employment and Labor could have gone and heeded to those demands, would have killed a multi-million rand industry in its track. So what it did is it met employers halfway. And we know that the regulation of non-standard employment has always been in the Labour Relations Act in the form of Section 198. And the Department of Labour and Employment, or Employment and Labour, got to get it right, went and effectively added four new sections to the Labour Relations Act, which regulates the use of non-standard employment, whether it's by a temporary employment service provider or by any employer using temporary fixed-term contracts. So why? Where was all this happiness? And that generally was because of the abuse of fixed-term contracts or labor broking situations. I was saying to you earlier that I've heard horror stories of somebody that had been working for a particular employer for 10 years leading up to the pandemic when it broke out, only for their fixed-term contract not to be renewed after 10 years of service. No retrenchment, no retrenchment benefits, no service pay, no, in fact, not even notice. Just
thanks
effectively, I'm not going to renew your contract of employment. You were also referring to other abuses.
So there's quite a lot of things that used to happen before the regulations and the new legislation came in, and it all comes down to employers trying to dodge their responsibilities in terms of the Labour Relations Act.
Another one would be where a service provider, a temporary employment relations service provider, has a employee that is working for a client. The client then decides, I don't like your face for whatever reason. Maybe it's even a legitimate reason. So they say they catch them stealing, for example, and they say, sorry, this person is no longer allowed on my site. that leaves the actual employer or the service provider with a employee that can't work on site. What do they do with them? They then contact their client saying, you know, provide me with details about how I can then, let's say, effect a disciplinary inquiry or the like. Then say, sorry, that's why,
not my problem. That's why we use you guys.
That's why we use you guys. We don't want to involve ourselves. And I think, again, when we start talking about these regulations, I think it's probably one of the reasons why they've done that, because they're saying, if you're going to effectively get in bed with the client, that relationship is going to be a little bit more intimate than what you think. And we'll talk about that as well. Another abuse, you can call it that, is when the actual nature of the work is not temporary, or for probation, for example. I'm going to test the waters. I'm going to see how well you do in this position, rather than using the actual probationary measures that are due to them, or just effectively using it. And another, I think I was chatting to you about it earlier, saying that you use a fixed term contract as a carrot because it derives good work out of the employee.
If you do well, I'll renew your contract, or I might make you permanent.
Yeah, come on. You nail this project again, then you're going to get and technically the work is then not temporary by nature, and it shouldn't be used. So now, when they made the amendments to the Labor Relations Act, they included these new sections. These new sections are only applicable to employees that the Department of Employment and Labor have effectively referred to as your vulnerable employees. And they've then put a line in the sand saying that these particular clauses are only applicable to those that are earning below the Basic Conditions of Employment Act threshold. What is that?
Okay, so the earning threshold at the moment is 224,080 rand and 48 cents per annum for an employee.
And that works out to about
so that calculates to 18,673 rand per month.
Yeah, I have done an episode on what is included in that. A lot of employers like to load monies into that and then say that they're actually above the threshold, when in fact those are exclusions legally and they're actually below. So check out that podcast as well. You will see it in the list of other ones. So for the purposes of these new sections, that we'll talk about your temporary employment service provider as well as fixed term contracts. So let's start with temporary employment service providers. That would be you as a employer that then provides labor to a client, or you may even be the client that's using a labor broker or temporary employment service provider to provide labor to you. But in terms of the definition of temporary services in the Labor Relations Act,
so a temporary service in terms of the Act is someone who provides service for no longer than 3 months, specifically. Someone who is temporarily replacing another employee, or anybody specified in terms of a sectoral determination, a bargaining council collective agreement, or anything gazetted by the minister as being deemed temporary services.
Yeah. The receptionist goes on maternity leave. Okay, cool. There's a genuine reason
exactly
why we do it,
that,
even though it's longer than 3 months. All right. So the main question and purpose of this podcast is, okay, so if there is a temporary service provider, under what circumstances would a employee of the temporary employment service provider then be deemed to actually be employed by the client?
Okay, so this is the simplest thing ever. We've just given the definition of what a temporary service is. If what you're doing does not fall under that definition, guess what? You are now the permanent employee of the client and no longer the employee of the temporary employment service. So
and that
if
needs
you're
to
there,
be specified. It's a permanent exactly. relationship, not just a transfer of that employment
yes.
contract. It's permanent.
So if it's for longer than 3 months, if you're not replacing someone else, if it's not in terms of one of those specific designated categories, you are not a temporary service. You're deemed the permanent employee of the client.
Yeah. So as the client, you would then find yourself with a new employee, or as the provider, where you then have that awkward conversation with your client trying to say, well, you know, my employee is now yours. And this does not come about from a Section 197 transfer. It doesn't come about by a creating a new employment or a new employment relationship. How does this actually then What is the nature of this deeming provision?
Well, it kicks in by operation of law. So the moment you've exceeded those 3 months and it wasn't for one of the reasons specified, you are now the employee of the client. So in practice, it's not really going to change much in terms of your day-to-day. Where it does start becoming a problem is if the employee has a complaint in terms of the workplace or the conditions of employment. Now I no longer take the temporary employment service to the CCMA. I can now take the client directly to the CCMA. And they're the ones who are going to have to pay for my misfortunes.
And I think that's probably one of the takeaways from this podcast, is because in practice, and I know specifically in my experience with this, is that you know, the employee doesn't sit with a calendar marking X's. It's usually when there's a dispute that they will then say, okay, by the way, I'm now not going to sue my employer because they're actually not my employer anymore. You are now deemed to be my employer. My problem is now with you. And that's usually when the client goes and says, well, what are we talking about here? And then we retrospectively go and look at this application of it. So it's genuinely becomes a dispute, and then we have this, exactly, this application of the law.
So effectively what's happening is I'm using a temporary employment service, but you're no longer really a temporary employment service. You kind of administrate my employees for me. So you're running the salaries, you might still do the discipline and so on, but they're still my employees.
And I think that's where employers, and I say that as the deemed employer or as the previous employer, come unstuck, is that, you know, rather than being proactive on these things, it's usually when we're sitting around the table at the CCMA that we then go and figure out, okay, well, who's got your – I still remember sitting in at the CCMA and having – I mean, it's a serious awkward situation. You're sitting there with your clients and then their clients as well, and literally the commissioner walks in and says, okay, cool, who's leaving the room? Who's here? Who's not? Who's the employer? Who isn't? And we're trying to save face in front of our client. You don't want to throw them under the bus, but then you also don't want to throw yourself under the bus. It's a serious awkward situation.
Indeed.
So that's when there is the temporary employment services provider, and that's the deeming provision for that. Now let's talk about fixed term contracts. That's probably the predominant use of
everybody's favorite.
Everybody's favorite. Yes, when I do a seminar on this, I always have that meme of Oprah handing out car keys from that one, and it's basically you get a fixed term contract. Everybody has a fixed term contract, but it shouldn't be used. But when can it be used? So let's talk about that. All right. So in terms of the Act, and I know I mentioned it earlier, but what is the actual legal definition of fixed-term contract?
Okay, so a fixed-term contract is a contract that terminates specifically after a certain period of time, upon the happening of a particular event or on the completion of a specific task, or then on a particular date other than your normal or agreed-to retirement date.
So effectively anything that's not indefinite employment.
Exactly.
Now, the golden question: when would a fixed-term contract with an employer actually be deemed to be permanent employment?
Okay. So here again, Section 198B has brought in certain provisions for those employees falling below the threshold, your vulnerable group of employees. And what that section basically says is that a fixed-term contract cannot exceed 3 months unless there is a justifiable reason. So I have to be able to prove that the nature of the work that I've employed you for on this fixed term contract is indeed fixed term. And I'm not just using this contract to, again, try and avoid my obligations in terms of the employer. LRI having to put you through dismissal and paying
annoying
out
things like hearings,
like operational requirements, yes, all those annoying things that we don't like to deal with.
And thank goodness, unlike what usually happens when it comes to application of the Labor Relations Act, we don't have to rely on the courts as to what is deemed a justifiable reason, because they've actually gone and defined justifiable reasons. And those would be?
So there's a nice list that they've given us in terms of what would qualify as justifiable reasons. If it is a specific project with a specific end date. So to give you an example, I need to finish building a building. Once it's finished being built, there's no more work to be done. That is a defined project. They also talk about things like seasonal work, a temporary increase in work, which is not going to exceed 12 months. where the work is being funded by an external source for a certain period of time. Your foreign nationals who are on a work permit that also that is going expire. To expire after a certain period of time. New graduates or new employees who basically in it just to gain work experience to enter into employment.
But a genuine actual internship.
Exactly.
And I know I'm interrupting you with these, but like I've seen many, many creative.
Oh, yeah, no, of course.
Creative.
They're being trained, employers. But they've been in the industry for years and years.
Yeah, so you've got 10 years. You've got 10 years of service, but you're an intern at my company. No,
exactly.
Not going to happen. And then also when they reach normal agreed upon retirement age.
Agreed, yes.
You can then use, that's fixing a justifiable contract, reason yes. for them thereafter. Talking about the creative use of these, I have seen employers refer to everything as a project. You know, every service or function in my business is a project. That's obviously going to get picked off by anybody that's looking at a dispute in relation to it. And I think what I'm then building on with that is I've also seen employers, and I've seen a contract of employment that has been created for an employer, and it literally has these listed justifiable reasons with a little box next to it, so that when you're filling in this contract, you can tick the box. I mean, that's obviously not what is required, because the Act specifically says that the employer must, at the time of offer or on the renewal, explicitly state, and there should be an agreement as to why the work is temporary in nature. That's not a tick box exercise, am I correct?
Correct. So you have to state which justifiable reason you're relying on, and then you have to explain what that justifiable reason is. So if I'm saying seasonal work, what seasonal work am I talking about? Okay, you're picking grapes when the grapes are no longer there, end of contract.
It's winter. Where is the grapes? You gave another great example of building a house, for example. So you do not have to then go and say, oh, well, this is an indefinite project, because you will know that it ends because the house is built. But if you go and you say contractor as your nature of the employment, how are you going to then link it to the project of building the house? And you then go and you say, well, contractor for or general worker for 4 months. Now, there's no actual link in that contract to that building of that house. So I always advise employers, when they are then entering into a fixed-term contract, that they put sufficient particularity in there that a third party, a commissioner or labor court judge that's looking at this, making a decision about this, can objectively say, well, it would have been when this house was finished. If you're now sitting around and you've built this house, there's nothing for you to do, you would know that your contract has naturally ended. And I think that's another one. You don't necessarily have to then go and bolt on a end date. It would be, if it's a genuine project, the project would end. You don't need to go and say. But I know a lot of employers will go and say on or about this date as a ways of getting a move on.
Because I firmly advocate for not putting any dates when it comes to a project. I prefer going with the completion of a particular task.
Yep.
It just gives you so much more flexibility in terms of, if we end early, I don't have to worry about paying out the remainder of your contract or then going through a retrenchment exercise. But also, if you go over, I don't have to worry about renewals and creating reasonable expectations of continued employment and all those other things.
I agree fully, because also when you've got that genuine project and then you've got an and or with a date, that then also will bring up another argument, specifically if the project is ended earlier.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. But, you know, I was doing a better job. I was doing a great job. I was doing it for the benefit of the company. But you promised me that period of time. So we spoke earlier, and I mentioned earlier about that horror story of employees that will work for many, many, many years. And they don't obviously then require to be retrenched because there's no permanent employment and the like. And they provide years and years of their life. Only to then leave the employment, whether it's for a legitimate reason, like we had with COVID, and we saw that the market was obviously ripped to shreds by COVID, and now they've built in protections for employees that provide years and years and years of service on a fixed term basis. What is that protection?
So in section 198B sub 10, they've specifically added a provision there that, where a fixed-term contract, on legitimate reasons, of course, is going to exceed 24 months, on termination of that contract, that employee would actually be entitled to a payment of 1 week's remuneration for each completed year of service. So it works almost like severance pay without actually being severance pay.
It's
a gratuity that we pay to these employees to reward them for long service, essentially.
Yeah, 100%. So they were there, and that's something that employers that are using fixed term contracts must then obviously make provision for. They must understand that there's not only going to be this period of time, but they then have to also make provisions for the minimum. And I'd say a minimum that they're entitled to. They could always go and ask for more. But they would then obviously have to make this provision into their costing that at the end of that period, they now also owe. Or we call it gratuitous service pay and the like.
Bearing in mind that there is a proviso here that if I secure alternative employment for you before the end of your contract, or I offer you a renewal or alternative employment on the same or similar terms, and you then refuse, you no longer get the gratuity.
And I think that's why it's got that link to in terms of the same way as Section 35.
Very much like severance pay, yes.
Correct. Okay, so... let's talk about the use of – I said it was an abuse, and why is it an abuse? So why are the use of fixed-term contracts as probation? Why is that a abuse in terms of the Act?
Okay. So, again, this is something that employers do to try and make their lives easier. So I put you on a fixed-term contract kind of as a trial run, and we do this to assess – whether we like you in the position or not, it's not necessarily going to be.
I always have this visual.
Performance.
I have this visual of the manager standing at like at the end of a gladiator match, thumbs up or thumbs down.
Exactly.
That's not what it's for.
So the Code of Good Practice in the Labor Relations Act, Schedule 8, actually has specific provisions in place for dealing with probation under Item 9, and it states there that. Probation cannot be used as a mechanism to deprive an employee of their permanent status. So it's not meant to be used as a test of whether or not we like you. The probation is only there to test the employee's ability to do the job.
Or as it says, suitability for the job. And just on that, can probation even can be used within a fixed-term contract? It could be.
It can be used, yes.
And it should be used, and it's generally widespread used in a permanent, but employers must understand that that's not a built-in fixed-term contract
exactly.
In a permanent relation.
Because
I've actually seen employers get it wrong by thinking that I've got a probationary clause, that has now passed, I'm going to now confirm employment. Yes, you can, but it doesn't mean that they're not permanent already, which
exactly.
means that if you're going to not confirm employment, that you should have then followed fair process and procedure.
The moment I put you on the probation, if the entire duration of the contract was not going to be fixed term, it's permanent from the word go, the moment you start with your probation. And the important thing about probation is at the end of that term, Code of Good Practice says there are certain steps that you must follow in order to terminate. So I can't let probation terminate by a fluxion of time.
Yeah.
As you would for a normal fixed-term contract. I have to go through the performance management steps. I have to give you an opportunity to have your say. I have to show that we've done the training, the guidance, the everything else before I can then actually terminate you. But
fair,
I can't say,
ach,
you've reached the end of your
yeah.
probation period. You didn't make it. Sorry, off you go.
And that being said, and it goes both ways. We've been talking a lot about vulnerable employees or deemed to be vulnerable because they're earning below that threshold. Now, what about, you know, the big, bad and ugly ones above? You know, the Act doesn't forget about them. So what is the route to recourse with the use of fixed-term contracts or non-standardized employment for those that are earning above the threshold?
Okay, so for your non-vulnerable employees, and the reason they specifically yeah. exclude people over the threshold is it's considered if you're earning in that bracket, you have a bit more bargaining power.
Definitely.
So yeah. that's why we can agree to things that are not necessarily there for the more vulnerable employees. So specific provisions that do kick in, though, is if you're going to be on a fixed-term contract for a certain period of time, on the whole, I should not be treating you less favorably than any other employee, unless I have valid reasons to treat you differently. For your fixed-term employees, if there's a vacancy in the workplace, I must offer that fixed-term employee the same opportunity to apply for the permanent position in the workplace as well. And then, of course, when it comes to the termination of that fixed-term contract, we have to be careful of not having created an expectation of either renewal or indefinite employment at the end of that fixed-term contract, because then that employee can still go and claim dismissal in terms of Section 186 of the LRA.
Yeah, so that reasonable expectation is the best way to sum it up. And reasonable expectation is not, and I know this is something that you and I have discussed in the past, and it's a bugbear of ours, it's not only created just by the simple act of renewal. It's a little bit more than that. There's this, I don't know, what do you call it, an urban myth that goes around that says if you've renewed a fixed-term contract twice or more, then automatically expectation is created. It's more than that. I'm correct.
Definitely. There's so much case law to this effect, SABC versus Malando being one of them, saying that the renewal does not create the expectation. It all depends on why we had to renew in the first place, what the reasons were they justifiable, and what I told the employee when I renewed.
Yeah. So again, if you do a good job, I'm going to renew this contract.
Exactly.
Expectation created.
But if I can give an example to this effect, if I'm working on external funding, for example, that's only granted to me 1 year at a time, I can only guarantee you employment for that 1 year that I'm granted funding. There's no guarantee that they're going to give me the same funding next year. So the moment they're in my funding, I can't then say, well, I had a reasonable expectation that you were going to keep renewing. You knew it was based on the funding. If it's not there, I can't give you work.
Now, a couple of other issues with regards to the use of fixed-term contracts we need to obviously get out of the way. The use of fixed-term contracts is I think employers don't realize what an administrative nightmare it actually is. And I know one of the most common questions that gets asked of myself is where the employee has now exceeded the end date of their contract. Whether it's above or below the threshold, it doesn't make a difference. But that contract has ended, and they then approach the employer and say, well, you know, my contract expired last month. Now, when am I getting my new one? And the employer then goes, oh, that expired, and you've still allowed them to work. Now, if that's expired, what is the nature or under what contract is their current employment?
So the courts have been rather clear in this particular circumstance. If you're putting someone on a fixed-term contract, better you make sure that your administration is in order and you've got your calendars tick and notifications popping up to make sure that you end the person's contract. If you allow that person to come back to work beyond the expiry of the contract essentially auto-renews on the exact same terms and conditions as the previous term. It doesn't necessarily mean that the person then becomes permanent the moment they work 1 day past their expiry, but if they were on a one-year contract and I allow them to continue, guess what? You've got them for another year.
And another nightmare that happens for employers is that they are providing, let's say, labor to a client, and they have fixed-term contracts that are linked to the client based on a project that the client's doing, and they basically administrate in this relationship, only for the client to pick up the phone one day and say, well, by the way, our project is on hold, or we've decided to cancel the project and the like. Now, the service provider or the employer themselves, it doesn't matter whether you're providing it to a third party or whether you're using it for your own internal project, you have a fixed-term contract that you've now guaranteed this person that you're going to employ them for whatever period of time, that's now just overnight disappeared. I now want to embark on operational requirement processes, but I don't have a clause in my contract that says that I can terminate prior to the end of the date for purposes of my operational requirements.
So very, very well-known case law that speaks exactly to this kind of problem is Buthelezi versus the Municipal Demarcation Board. And what the court said is that is exactly the risk that employers run when you're making use of a fixed-term contract. You are guaranteeing employment for a certain period of time. And this is a question of fairness versus lawfulness. So even though I might have a fair reason here for needing to terminate, being my operational requirements, if a fixed-term contract does not expressly provide for premature termination for operational reasons, it is not lawful to end it prematurely. So if you don't have a retrenchment clause in that fixed term contract, you are held to the term in that contract, which essentially means that you're going to have to pay out the remainder of
you
that contract.
You owe the amount that you promised in that contract. So you have to ensure, if you're using fixed term contracts, that you have provisions and there's express agreement by the party you're entering into a contract with that should operational requirements require that you would then be able to terminate them. Or you're stuck.
Exactly.
For that full period. And let's talk about some dispute resolution issues as well. Now, we spoke about things getting awkward because it's usually when we're sitting at the CCMA or a bargaining council, pointing fingers at who's the employer. And where an employee has worked past, let's say, the 3 months, and they feel that there's no justifiable reason as to their employment and they're below the threshold, there is a application that they can do in terms of Section 198D, which would be for the interpretation of whether they are then deemed to be permanent or not. Now, we need to understand that they don't need to do that before they actually are then deemed
exactly.
to be permanent.
So the deeming provision kicks in automatically. So the moment I then have a complaint against my employer, whether I decide it's going to be the TES, whether I decide it's going to be the client, I can then approach the CCMA directly for a case of unfair dismissal. Yeah. Or if I'm being treated differently from other deemed permanent employees, I can always go unfair labor practice. But I don't have to first be declared an employee to have recourse to the CCMA to have that sorted out for me.
100%. So that's the takeaway. You do not need to go and apply for
a declarator.
Court to declare that I'm actually now an employee of either or on an indefinite basis. That would get sorted out by the commissioner that
exactly.
is then arbitrating.
So that'll be a question of jurisdiction. When the case starts off, commissioner is going to look into who is the employer of this particular employee. Are you an employee or not? And that's basically where it goes from there.
Like my meeting that I had where the commissioner basically was like, the employer can stay, the rest of you guys can all duck.
Who is that?
We have to figure out. Who is that? But Audrey, thank you. It was an informative session. I think this is probably going to be one of the more popular ones that is referred to because it is something that is an everyday occurrence for employers. So thank you again for your time again. We're slowly making you a friend of the show. Yes,
I love
friends of the show. So I might be knocking on your door in the near future to come and help us dissect another topic.
Anytime.
Thank you. So that's it for another episode of Stuff Employers Should Know. As always, if you found the episode very helpful, go and smash the like button, subscribe button, and all the other buttons that will help us out. And if you want to get in touch, send us an email at sesk@labornet.com or hit us up on any of the social media platforms. From myself, BGD, and Yas, and Audrey, till next episode, cheers.
Stuff Employers Should Know was proudly brought to you by Labornet, management's ultimate HR solution. For more episodes from Stuff Employers Should Know, go to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you play your favorite shows. Case law or statutes referenced in the podcast are current at the time of recording.